So with that, worship, we talk about worship. We just kind of throw this term around worship all the time. We say Sunday morning worship. It's a worship service. We talk about we worship and then we have a sermon. And we just kind of throw these terms around and they kind of not kind of really sure what they mean. A lot of the times, does worship mean a song? Does worship mean a service? Does worship mean what? And so with that, kind of today is just all about kind of defining what is worship and kind of is worship something we sometimes do? When do we worship? Just kind of examining that one simple idea, because I've been to a lot of churches in my day. I've gone to church my whole life. Went to Bible college. And when you're in Bible college, you do all sorts of interesting things. So I've seen lots of different ways to do worship services. So, for example, the church I grew up with has this big, gigantic band with like 30 people in it. And they come up with really dumb ideas like salsa music for an evening. And so we're at this thing and it starts playing a salsa version of Awesome God. So it's like, our God is an awesome God. He reigns. Except that wasn't salsa at all. But if that had been salsa, that would have been the salsa version of it. But it's like busts out, and like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. There's horns going, and it wasn't ska music, so it was pretty peculiar. And the whole thing was just very strange, not my thing at all. I've been to a church, a Hispanic church in a lower income area, where the drum kit was literally duct taped together, and it fell apart when we just looked at it. It was such in such bad shape, and like every drum beat was every single song. So, amazing grace. Just every single song, that one beat. And it's not because he was a bad drummer. It's because he only had a kick and a snare. And there just wasn't anything else he could do with the drum kit. It was just that. And so I've been to services like that. I went to a church once. I didn't grow up in the charismatic background, but I went to this charismatic church. And, I mean, all sorts of stuff going on that I wasn't quite used to. And stuff that, you know, kind of opened my eyes to the different way of doing things. Over, I guess, last month, we went to a Roman Catholic wedding. Never been to a Roman Catholic Mass before, and it was a lot of standing, lots of sitting, lots of kneeling, and saying, repeating things after people that I didn't know what I was supposed to say. And so that's one view of worship. There's the salsa version of worship. There's our version, which is the shaking your clothes. It's so loud, and the bass is knocking things off the wall version of worship. And so we kind of throw around worship, and we're going, what on earth does worship mean? I mean, my sister went to college at a Christian college where they said that you can't use instruments in worship. And so they come up to sing the music and they pull out a tuning fork and they hit it on the podium and they hear the note and they go, okay, into marvelous lights I'm... And they just break out into song based off a tuning fork. So that's another view of worship. That kind of leads us to a problem. What exactly is worship? And if you look on your handouts, there's somewhere around the room, I put a quote from a guy named Louis Giglio, and he phrased it quite differently. He didn't phrase it as if it was a style of music or a part of a worship service. This is what he had to say. Worship is our response to what we value most. Worship is our response to what we value most. I repeat a third time. Worship is our response to what we value most. So that, the idea is it's not a kind of music, it's not a service, but it's a response to something. And it doesn't even have to be like a Christian thing. So you go to church and, you know, I tell you, everybody stand up. Everybody stand up. We're going to sing a song. We're going to sing a song. So everybody stands up. And because you're socialized properly, you figure out you're supposed to sing at that point in time. You're not supposed to pull out a book and start reading. If everybody stands up and you're sitting down, you look antisocial. So at church, when you start singing songs and you start going through the motions, a lot of times all you're doing is following what everybody else is doing. It's not really a pure response. Like I went to a U2 concert, I guess, man, it was like 8 years ago now. And at this U2 concert, I'm standing by these two guys, and I was in like the pit right by the stage, and it was one of these booths where they had a big, gigantic stage. There was a big circle, and Bono would run around the circle. And so for about 30 seconds during the show, Bono was like 8 feet away from me, and it was like I could just feel his radiant glory coming off of his body. And when this happened, these two guys were standing next to me. They were twins. And as his radiant glory of Bono, the ultimate rock star who's somehow cool in his late 40s, hits these guys, they start going, ah! And start jumping in circles. Literally. We're at a rock concert in public, and these guys are going, ah! Jumping in circles like we're singing Marvelous Light, that part about spinning around, and everybody spins around in the room. These guys just did that because Bono was near them. And it was just like, nobody told, Bono wasn't like, spin. And they went, ah! They weren't singing that song. These guys just were like, wow, this is incredible! And they start spinning. And during the whole thing, they're pop, bump, bouncing up and down, and nobody else is doing it. We're all kind of giving them funny looks. But they were just so energized, I eventually got into it, and I was like, I can be a weirdo too. And I started jumping up and down and bouncing and spinning in circles, and it was like incredible. And all it wasn't that anybody told us to do it. It was because it was like, wow, you two's incredible. I don't know how a guy that old can be so cool, but Bono, wow, he's even kind of funny looking if you really look at him. And he hasn't aged very well, but man, he's still so cool. And we all just had this incredible experience seeing this band play live. Nobody told us to. We, in fact, paid money to go do this. And so it was as our response to them. We valued them. We thought they were really cool. The music was great. And so our response to them was all the jumping and spinning and screaming and ah! That we did. That was our response to something we valued. Another thing comes in different forms. So I got a video off of YouTube. It's from, I guess you could call it a worship service, a news journalist of unique integrity went to interview people at this worship service, and I want to show you this video from this worship service. And it's not what you'd expect to be a worship service. You plug it in. Watch this. Check this out.
Premier night here for Attack of the Clones, but outside the Ziegfeld Theater is the real show, Return of the Dorks. Thousands of 35-year-old men waiting days, even months, for just a taste of George Lucas's table scraps.
And here with, all right, you're dressed as a huge nerd, yes? Yes. No, what, seriously, you're supposed to be...
supposed to be a Jedi.
You're a Jedi Knight, yeah.
This is Risk. Very exciting. This game is normally played indoors by 12-year-olds. This is a nice break for you. You're getting away from the drudgery of your normal mundane life. Spent playing Stratego at home.
Look at this one. You look like some kind of super nerd. That was built. It looks like you were built in a laboratory out of parts from a lesser nerd. You look like he's a bionic nerd, if you will.
I don't deal with lesser life forms.
You don't deal with lesser life forms? You must be a lonely guy. Look at you. How are you, cutie? What parent forced you to do this? Right over here.
Look at this. It's a geek from another dimension.
Lord of the Rings? Lord of the Rings?
Come here. I am Black Wolf the Dragon Master. You are an unofficial wizard, and don't you forget it.
All right. Apparently the nerds are looking for a Jedi to challenge the nerd from Lord of the Rings.
Whichever one of you wins is the Uber Dork. You're even lucky your superiors at late night even decided to let you out today.
Seriously.
You know what? Take this. Fresh hound.
Quite an imagination, yes.
Very exciting. Darth Vader himself is here. All the other nerds tremble in his presence.
What are you supposed to be?
I am Triumph. Oh, scary nerd.
And which of these... which of these buttons calls your parents to pick you up?
What are you supposed to do?
I am a stormtrooper.
You are a huge nerd.
You are a hot dog.
The stormtroopers talk like 60s robots. No idea. I am a stormtrooper. Reveal yourself. Reveal yourself.
Hi, I'm Colonel Sanders.
Okay, put it back on.
We are witnessing an actual Star Wars nerd wedding. Truly beautiful.
It's our king.
And we now kiss your bridesmaids.
And now the nerds are congregating for the ceremonial banging of the plastic toys. This is what a nerd circus joke looks like. This is a very exciting ritual. They play the previous crappy movie while the nerds act out scenes from it. Let's enjoy.
Excuse me, but the most suspicious place would be by the
Dear friends, our work here is over. We have enjoyed our stay. But the forces of reality compel us to depart. May the force be with you.
All right. So I can play that because I used to have a Star Wars website myself. I went and saw the new Star Trek movie a week before it came out. I've been to many Star Trek conventions in my life. So I can make fun of nerds all I want because I am one of them and part of the group. I'm not just being mean. Anyway, so I play that. Why would I call that a worship service? Well, because people would dedicate days, weeks of their life to waiting in line to see a movie before everybody else. If you value something so much, just seeing the movie before somebody else, that's worship. And that's a pretty strong response. I mean, like, I even remember, excuse me, when that came out, seeing people waiting in line way days before it came out, and they've got a little cooker, and they've got a tent and pillows, and they're literally playing board games on the sidewalk waiting for it to come out because they valued it so much that they would pay any cost to get to see it before other people. That is an act of worship. Obviously not for God, but it's worshiping something. And I actually looked up statistics, a word I can't say, about when Phantom Menace came out, and apparently about $300 million worth of work hours were lost because so many people took off work to go see Star Wars when it came out. They're like, wow, I got to go see Phantom Menace the day it comes out. I haven't seen a new Star Wars movie in nearly 20 years. Took off work, $300 million worth in one day. That is ridiculous. That's insane. $300 million with one day for one movie, seeing it before other people. That is an act of worship. Obviously not worshiping the right thing. So the big idea for today, the big idea we're starting with and kind of unpacking today, is that everyone worships. So every one of you is worshiping something. I'm worshiping something. Everyone in the world, even the Lord of the Rings guy walking down the street with a cane, beating on the dog's head, everyone's worshiping something. The question is, are you worshiping the one who deserves all worship? Because we're all worshiping something. We're all dedicating our time towards something. We're all dedicating our money towards something, our effort. Are you dedicating it towards the right thing? So Colossians 1:16 says this, "For by Him all things were created, things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by Him, for Him." So we were created to connect with God. There's this longing in us to connect with God. Theologians have called it different things, a God-shaped hole, a vacuum in the soul that only God can fill. There's something that we're longing to fill. So everybody's trying to fill that with something, and we try and go after different things to fill that void. So everybody's worshiping something. Everybody's going after something. The question is, are you going after the right thing? I came up with this confusing phrase. I liked it. It's probably everyone else will hate it because it's just so weird. But we're created by God, for God, but we turn to everything but God as if it were God. So the idea is we're supposed to connect with God, but we're turning to everything else. In our day-to-day lives, we think, well, you know, I like video games. I like music. I like this. I like that. I like sports. We turn to everything. We treat it like God. That becomes the thing we worship instead of turning to God. That's our natural bent, to turn to other things besides God as if they were God. And we all want to say, like we sang a song, I will give you all my worship. We all said that, if you were singing along, but none of that, that's not true for any of us. It might be the desire of our heart, but it's not true that we actually give all of our worship to God. We give some of our worship to God, some of it to all kinds of other things. So the question is, what does it look like to actually give all your worship to God? There's a lady in the Gospels, in Luke 7, it says this. We're going to camp out here for a little while. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So that's unusual. The Pharisees normally tried to kill Jesus. They didn't invite him over for dinner. So this one was the exception. So he went with the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a simple life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster, I don't know what alabaster is, jar of perfume. So keep this in mind. Pharisees don't like sinners. This simple woman shows up, so she probably wasn't invited. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair and kissed them and poured perfume on them. So this lady shows up, probably not invited, extremely unlikely that she was invited, sees Jesus, is so moved emotionally that she starts bawling, crying on his feet, uses her hair to wipe it away, and then kisses his feet, and he doesn't have shoes on, walks around everywhere, and then pours this jar of perfume on his feet. Think, okay, what does that mean? What's going on here? Well, this is a woman that so values Jesus that she's going to give anything to worship him. And so I kind of broke this down. If you look on the blanks, I've got five blanks. Kind of, if you look at the passage, you see what's going on with this woman and the way she treats Jesus and her worship towards Jesus. So the first thing is she dedicates her time to something she values. She says, Jesus is coming to town, I'm going to go see Jesus. Jesus is here, I'm going to go see him. So one way, one test to see what you worship is, where do you spend all of your time? You just look at where you spend your time, and that's going to give you a pretty good idea what you value. So if you say, well, I don't have time to have a quiet time, I don't have time to go to church, I don't have time to do this, I don't have time to do that, because I'm doing this, 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 and this, and this, well, that tells you kind of what you're worshiping here, what's more valuable to you. Because if the thing you really valued was church, Jesus, God, quiet time, prayer, then you'd make time for that. But if you don't have time for it, that says something about your values. Now, I understand there's different days and there's reasons from time to time why that would be different. But if you simply don't have time for something, you probably don't value it. And to give you a real strange example of how someone's time kind of shows you what they value. So you look at where you spend all of your time, and that you follow that trail, and that tells you something that's valuable to you. That tells you something you're worshiping. Next one on here, money. So this jar of alabaster perfume, it tells us kind of later in the passage in one of the other Gospels, it tells us how much this thing cost, and it's the equivalent of about 1 year's wages. The amount of money she makes in a year, she used to buy this perfume, or maybe she inherited it, but she has this jar, and it's worth a year's wages, and she just pours it on Jesus' feet. You hear that, and you go, that's crazy, a year's wages? All the money you make in 1 year used in one moment towards one person? That's weird. That's strange. That's unusual. Well, that's giving someone all your worship. When you prioritize something so much that I'll just spend all of my money towards this, well, that is an act of serious worship. That's what worship looks like. And so, I mean, there's things I've never bought. I've never bought any lipstick. So you don't see me wearing lipstick, so I don't buy lipstick. If you saw me wearing lipstick, that'd be weird. But so I don't buy lipstick because it doesn't matter to me. I never bought a Gigapet or a Furby when they were popular. Lots of people went, those are cool, I'm going to go out and buy one, that looks cool. I went, those are weird, and I have real pets, so why would I buy a fake pet that chirps at me in the middle of the night because it's not socialized properly because they didn't program it very well? Why would I want that? I wouldn't. So I didn't go out and buy one. I've never bought Crocs. Those weird shoes that get caught in escalators and kill children. I've never bought those. I always thought they were weird looking. I saw them and went, yeah, I don't like...
Are you sure you're not telling us about
what? The kids? Yeah, the death part was not true. The part about kids' feet getting caught in escalators was true. And everybody's shoes get caught in escalators. Everything's dangerous and everything is... So don't worry about it. But anyway, Anyway, rabbit trail. But so I never bought Crocs because I never valued them. There are things I have bought. I've bought a lot of recording equipment because I like recording things. Whether it's my talks, which this microphone's for, or whether it's recording music. I used to have a big, gigantic, expensive digital recorder, and I used to have all this software on my computer until it was all stolen. But I used to have all this stuff because that was something I valued. Bought a guitar because I value music. Well, you can follow the path of where your money's going, and that'll tell you what you value, because you don't buy things you don't value unless you're real dumb. And I'm serious, because if you're buying stuff you don't like and you don't care about, that's just kind of stupid. And some people actually do that because they're just addicted to shopping, which tells you once again what they value, getting stuff. But you don't buy things that you don't value. So you can follow that line of thought. If you don't give your money to the church, you don't give it to charities, you don't support a compassion child, well, that tells you that you like yourself more than you like to serve God and be a blessing to others. And I say that very much as a person who for many years didn't give any money away and kept all my money, had a job and stored it up and bought all sorts of CDs that were stolen or that I don't listen to or that I lost or that I snapped in half that disappeared somewhere along the way. And I mean, we spend our money on things we value. And if you're not giving your money towards something, that tells you how much you value that thing. So this lady gives a year's worth in one moment because it's the one chance she gets to meet Jesus. So that tells you what she valued. Third one on here. Emotional energy. Kind of your emotions. You know, I don't care about sports at all, so I invest zero emotional energy into sports. I'm not a sports guy. Like I said, I'm a music guy, not a sports guy. So I don't get worked up at all over the Super Bowl. I didn't even know who played in the Super Bowl. I showed up to a Super Bowl party and was like, hey, I'll set the equipment up, but I don't have a clue what's going on and don't really care. But I did care about a couple of sporting events. The year that I went to Westwood High School, the year Westwood High School beat Westlake, I was very proud of my high school. That mattered to me, but it wasn't because I cared about sports, it's just because I don't like Westlake. And then it was the year that UT won the whatever it won. I don't even know what it won, but it won something, and I was proud of that once again, but that's just because I'm from Austin, and the schools in Austin had nothing to do with actually caring about sports. But you don't invest your emotional energy into things you don't care about. This lady shows up, she's just in the presence of Jesus, breaks down and cries, and apparently he's crying so much that it's covering Jesus' feet with tears. That's some serious crying. So much so she has to wipe it away with her hair. And that's how much emotional energy she put into it. So, I mean, you know, some people read. I recall a day my wife was reading Harry Potter. I think it was book 6. A character everybody likes died, and all of a sudden she breaks down crying. And I'm like, what's going on here? And it's like she just has an emotional breakdown, and I think she's gone bonkers. And then she tells me what happened, and I go, oh, I still don't care, but at least there's a line of thought here. She's getting emotional about a book. But so it was a story she cared about and a character she was emotionally invested in, even though he's not real and couldn't possibly be real because wizards aren't real. But there's an emotional...
Too far.
You know, leave and people are going to stone me and beat me with bats and drag me behind their car. But wizards aren't real. Wizards aren't real, neither are fairies. That was something I had to tell my sister once, and that didn't go well. And she's older than me, which made it even weirder. But you get emotionally invested in things you actually care about. If you get emotionally invested in everything, you're going to have problems because there's a lot of things to get emotional about. But whatever you get emotionally invested in, that's something that you worship. fourth one on here, actually it isn't in the passage, it's just true. And so you take it and leave it as you want. But what you talk about, what you talk about, and it's not a matter of quality, it's a matter of quantity. And normally it's the opposite, but in this case, in the matter of what you talk about, it is about quality or quantity rather than quantity. Because we show up to church and you put stuff up on the screen and you say these words and maybe we'll sing this incredible hymn that's lasted the test of time, language barriers, and you say incredible quality statements about God to God in an act of worship. And then you go to school and you never talk about God ever again because it's not something you truly value. I mean, things you actually value, you talk about. So for example, I dated this girl back 9 years ago, and it's the girl that, those who were here when I was doing the dating series, the girl that didn't brush her teeth. So I dated this girl, she broke up with me, broke my heart, and then through a series of events, a year later, we find ourselves working at the same place, which was terribly awkward because I was still smitten, and she was there around me, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, which is never good when you're smitten with someone. I don't know if you're supposed to use smitten like that. So anyway, so I'm hanging around her. Anyway, so this other guy whom I was friends with starts to take interest in her. And everything he says about her is, oh man, she's... And he talks to me regularly, like on a daily basis, like, she is so weird. Like, I can't believe how weird she is. I haven't met too many people as weird and awkward and strange as her. That night he goes and plays pool with her. Next day, man, I can't believe what she was saying last night. It was unbelievable. She is so weird and peculiar and strange. I just can't believe it. And he just keeps talking about her all the time. But it's always, I can't stand this girl. Goes to the movies with her. So come to be, as soon as the summer ends, she goes back to college. I get fired. He goes off to college. I like to sneak that one in there because they accuse me of never telling that story before. So we all go off our different ways. 2 weeks later, they start officially dating, and now they're married. Every conversation, not joking, they're married. Every conversation I had with this guy about her was, man, I can't believe her. Why would anyone want to be around her? Every conversation, and the whole time he liked her and ended up marrying her. Well, if you followed what was going on there, it wasn't the quality of what he said, it wasn't what he said itself, it was the fact that he was obsessed with her and couldn't stop talking about her. All he could do was just keep talking about this girl. Well, if you can't stop talking about something, you probably value it. Flip side is true of that. If you never talk about something, that says something about how much you value it. If it never comes up in conversation, it's not something you ever care to talk about with your friends. I mean, it's like if you go see a movie and you're like, that was awesome. That was incredible. You go and tell your friends and say, hey, you got to go see this thing. It was amazing. If you like a band, you share it with your friends. That's what we naturally do. If you don't care about something, you don't do that. But so you can look at what you talk about and trace that to see what you actually care about in worship. So the last one on here, just kind of going through that, one last thought on that. I mean, like, if you talk about movies all the time, probably like movies. If your sense of humor involves quoting TV shows, as a lot of my friends it does, probably like TV shows. If you talk about sports all the time, that's probably something you really care about. You talk about politics, and you have a blog about politics, and you go to every politics website. What's a politics website? But, I mean, if you're just obsessed with politics, and you talk about it, write about it, everything about it, probably value politics. If you just talk nonsense, you're probably a nut job. But, I mean, if you talk about ministry, that's my thing. I work at a church. I talk about ministry. I probably value ministry. And that one looks spiritual, but it can be true. I can talk about ministry all day long without talking about God, and I've had many conversations like that because I just talk about ministry all the time because it's what I do. Ministry can be my idol, which is an interesting concept. So look at what you talk about, and that tells you what you value. The last one on here, this one kind of sums up everything, is priorities. Priorities. So what do you prioritize with your time? What's the priority with your money? What's the priority with your emotional state and your emotional energy, your priorities with your talk, if you trace that path, you follow the path of where all of that goes, you figure out what you're worshiping. You know, what's the thing in your life that everything bends around? You follow that path, and you'll figure out what you worship. It tells you a lot about who you are. I mean, you look in the passage, just reread this thing. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she bought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, so like I said before, she shows up at a Pharisee's house. Talk about an awkward situation. The Pharisee thinks she's wicked, sinful, needs to go to the temple, needs to repent. He looks down on her. I mean, she walks in the room and he's going, oh my goodness, what is she doing here? She doesn't care about that awkwardness. She still goes in there. Prioritizes with all of her money, not in a small way, in a huge way. Invests all of her emotions. She bends down and cries on his feet, wipes it with her hair. And she can't go home and take a shower because showers weren't invented for another 1900 years. So she just messes up her hair, rubbing the dirt feet. Reaches down and kisses him, which is gross even today. Back then it was grosser because Jesus didn't have a shower either. And then pours a year's wages onto his feet. You think about that. That is worship. She so prioritized Jesus, so valued Jesus, she would put anything to make him look great, anything to honor him, bent everything to be able to do something to worship him. That's what it looks like to give all your worship to something. And so often that's not what we do. So you look at what you prioritize, the thing in your life that everything bends around, you figure out what you worship, you figure out what your idol is. So I kind of compiled a list of things, and the way I compiled this list is I thought about the people in this room, I thought about the people I know from other churches, I thought about the leaders, I thought about myself, thought of people down the street, and I just compiled a list of things that could be idols in people's lives. So you might think, well, he's not talking about me, or he just happened to say that. No, I probably had you in mind if I know you when I wrote this down. So I just want to make clear with you, I thought about each one of you and went, oh, what could their idol be, and wrote it down. So here's a list of things you can expel your time, energy, emotions, money, and prioritize and bend everything to chase this one thing. And I even put, like I said, stuff about me, and none of these are inherently bad, but these can be your idols. Grades. You ask my wife, that was me in college. Baseball, football, basketball, volleyball, Boy Scouts, music, school band, being in a band, looks, TV, job, friends, popularity, or trying to be famous, movies, cheerleading, the internet, personal comfort, personal enjoyment, ministry and church stuff. Ministry and church stuff, like I said, that's me. I tell you right now, I prioritize a lot of stuff about doing ministry, and you ask my wife how many times she's like, do we have, I mean, 5 days a week doing a church doing church functions? Don't you care about me and you, the marriage? That kind of matters too. So I can even, a good thing like church ministry, that can become an idol. None of those things are inherently sinful. All of them can be sinful. All of them can be idols. And all of them can be the thing you worship instead of worshiping God. So what's the thing that you prioritize, you talk about, you invest your emotions in, you spend your money on, and you spend all your time on? That's what you worship. You follow that path and you find what you worship. So if we spend the last couple minutes on this, and I just kind of might have hit you on the head saying, okay, wow, I don't worship God all that much. I worship whatever it is that you follow that path, and that's the thing you worship. You think, well, what do I do with this then? What do you do with that? Well, there's kind of two things you can do with something that's an idol. First one, in Exodus chapter 23, first thing you can do with an idol is you can destroy it. So you can destroy them. This is what it said, and this is from Exodus. It's right after the nation of Israel got out of Egypt. It says, my angel will go ahead of you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, Hivites, Jebusites, and will wipe them out. So we don't have any of those people, so you worship something different from what those guys do. So don't think about what the Canaanites worship. Think about the things that you worship. And he says, do not bow down before their gods or worship them or follow their practices. You must demolish them and break their sacred stones to pieces. So I really desperately wanted to bring in a microwave, and I was going to bring in a bunch of idols and different things like music. If you idolize, we put it in the microwave and destroy it. I just don't have a microwave that I could destroy like that, unfortunately, because I already did. One time I was doing a sermon, and I set our microwave on fire, and it cost $500 to replace. So, oops. Yeah, didn't want to do that again. I just so desperately wanted to fry some stuff in a microwave. Couldn't do it, though. And we smashed stuff last week and caused $100 worth of damage I didn't mean to cause, and so probably shouldn't smash stuff again. But sometimes our idols literally need to be demolished. Tables are expensive. We snapped the table in half.
$100 table?
Probably not. There's no such thing as a $15 table. No, there's no $15 table. Stuff is expensive.
Garage sale.
Right. If you get one at a garage sale, it's $15. But that one, yeah, if you can find one, that'd be great, and I could give some money back to some people. Anyway, no more rabbit trail. But sometimes the best thing is to demolish stuff. So I've heard tons of stories of people, well, I was listening to secular music and it was evil, so I went out and smashed all my secular CDs and bought Jesus CDs. No, don't do that. But maybe if music is your idol, you take all of your CDs, even the Christian ones, and you say, this is an idol, I sit around worshiping music. That sounds ridiculous to say you worship music, but if you spend all your money on music, which I used to do, maybe you need to get rid of that idol in your life. Now, as I actually heard a pastor say that. He goes, I realized music was my idol, and I was about to be a worship leader, and so I took all my CDs, and I just felt an urge that I needed to even take all of my Christian ones, my U2 CDs, my incredible U2 CDs with the music of Bono. And it took all of them, got all my friends together, particularly the wicked pagan ones, went out into a field, smashed them, set a fire, and burned them, and went, look, this is my idol is gone, I've demolished it. Sometimes that's what you need to do with an idol. Quit a job, quit a sport, quit whatever it is, because it's an idol in your life and you value that more than God, and you need to give up something lesser so you can gain something more, and that's Jesus. That's what Paul says, is he counted all as rubbish for the sake of knowing you. And that word rubbish in the King James is translated dung, and really it's probably translated a word in English I can't say right now, but you can't put that in the Bible because a lot of people get mad about that because we're more holy than the Bible a lot of the times. But so that's what Paul said. I count it all as rubbish or something else for the sake of knowing you. So sometimes you need to demolish it. Other times, last blank on there, you can redeem it. You can redeem it. So you say, well, I overly value cheerleading, baseball, band, my job. You overly value these things where it's the thing that's most important. You spend all your time, you prioritize, you bend everything towards that thing. That's bad. Then again, you can redeem that and you say, you know what? This isn't going to be about baseball. I'm going to be on the baseball team. I'm going to be on the cheerleading squad. I'm going to be in Boy Scouts. And I'm going to be a missionary there. And both through my words, my speech, my actions, I'm going to make Jesus look great where I'm at. And it's not that you have to quit everything. And it's not that, well, you know what I mean? You say that it's an idol, so should I just go to church every single day of the week? Is that what you're saying? Do I need to just open my Bible and read the Bible? No, because we're supposed to be in the world, not of the world. So being in the world sometimes means you're just supposed to be there and be an awesome example of what a Christian should be. Be Christ to the people that don't know Christ. Use language that's encouraging, builds people's up, be a blessing to the people around you. And so that thing that's an idol doesn't have to be an idol. You can redeem it and you can use it as an opportunity to make Jesus look great in this world. So as we kind of come to a close on our first week on worship, you have to realize everyone is a worshiper. Not everybody who's worshiping God. Are you worshiping God with everything that you have? Or are you worshiping something else? We're supposed to be worshiping God. So often we're worshiping something else. Dear God, as the band comes back up and we continue into song, help us to focus in on the things in our life that aren't of you. The things that are idols, the things that are pulling us away from you, that if we prioritize, we spend our money, we spend our energy pursuing instead of pursuing you. and help us to demolish the ones that don't belong there, that can't be redeemed, and redeem the things that can be redeemed, so that you can look great, so that you can be famous in this world. And as we're as a ministry all about, so that one day in this city, it will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. God, help us to be a part of that. And help us to be worshipers of you through our words, through our actions, and in everything we do. Let it all be for your glory. In your name we pray. Amen.